It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Lift off.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook. Bridge House, the three and the lead. You betcha. Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on the bird at JT Gatlin, and of course, our show is also available on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And if you're also interested, you can check out my newest endeavor on Twitter at Clutch City CR, a new Houston Hoops blog that I started with a bunch of contributors, so please be sure to check that out. And hey, if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So for today's show, I want to talk a little bit about, probably mostly about the Blazers-Rockets matchup and just why I think that this, of the remaining six seeding games, I think this is probably the trappiest of all the games. Like, this is the game that if you're going to get trapped into a game and lose one and actually drop a game in the bubble, I think this is the game that would be dropped. And the reasoning behind that is pretty simple. One, the Rockets have this, you know, uncanny ability to play up to and down to their level of competition. And the Blazers, let's face it, are not upper echelon type competition. They're fighting. They are surviving, trying to fight for a playoff spot. And that is part two as to why I'm a little concerned about this matchup, is because the Rockets have secured their playoff standing. They are in the playoffs, period. They have locked in a seed. Now, it still remains to be seen where things shake out at, but as it stands right now, the Rockets, if they could lose the next six seeding games, and the lowest they will go is the seventh seed. So the Rockets are locked into the playoffs. Now, does that mean that they're locked in and worried about their seeding? Probably not. The Blazers are fighting for their playoff lives. If they want to make it to the playoffs and even have a chance at playing in the first round, which the only way that they make it in is as the eighth seed, so they're still looking down the barrel of a matchup with the Los Angeles Lakers. But that being said, if they really want to make it there, they've got to try and win as many games as possible. And so they are going to be treating these games as if they're playoff games, because their playoff lives depend on these games, unlike the Rockets. So I want to talk about that a little bit more in segments two and three. But in this first segment, I actually want to spend just a brief moment, because I went back and kind of double-checked what I had talked about in the recap of the Bucks game, and I don't think I did enough justice to Russell Westbrook. I think I glossed over his game a little bit, and that is unfair to Russ. He really put the team on his shoulders there down the stretch. 11 points in the fourth quarter, 5 of 6 at the free throw line, 4 of 4 when it mattered most. And I think, again, at times, Russell Westbrook is taken for granted. And I say this as somebody who used to have not a vehement, like, hatred for Russ, but as somebody who, you know, was a firm proponent of the fact that James Harden should have won that MVP award over Russ, you know, as somebody who loved facing the Thunder and watching the Rockets beat Russell Westbrook. And I know that this entire season has been, you know, flipped upside down because of COVID, but even before that, it was flipped upside down when Russell Westbrook became a Houston Rocket, right? And I feel like there's a lot of Rockets fans and even Rockets media to an extent that don't give him a fair shake. And, you know, in a way, maybe expect more out of him, or the, you know, just, it's tough for Russ to impress, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And, you know, the guy has been phenomenal across, you know, these two. Well, I don't want to say phenomenal in the Mavericks game. He was good in the Mavericks game, but he was phenomenal in this one. And I didn't give him enough credit for what he did in this game. 31 points, 10 of 12 at the charity stripe, had 6 rebounds, had 8 assists. Yeah, he had the 5 turnovers, but between James Harden and Russell Westbrook, as long as they keep their turnovers at 8 or fewer, I'm actually pretty comfortable with that, because everybody else on the team handles handles the ball so infrequently that if you've got James and Russ only combining for 8 turnovers, and then you say there's maybe 2 to 3 turnovers from other players, that's a pretty nice number to sit at. And I'm comfortable with that level of, you know, coughing the ball up, I guess. It'd be great if you didn't average any turnovers, but that's not realistic in the slightest. So that being said, Russ, you know, I gave him props for his defense down the stretch, but I didn't really hype up the fact that he was able to carry the team offensively. And it's so unique having two superstars that have such dynamic styles to their offensive repertoire, and they just contrast so beautifully. And against the Bucks, you know, James Harden, a guy who at times probably falls a little bit too in love with that three-point shot, you know, and in this one specifically, he was 3 of 12 from behind the arc. Just, you know, never quite got the shot rolling the way that he normally does. And, you know, he was 2 of 2 inside the arc, but he was just taking too many three-pointers. And maybe it's just the length of the Bucks was, you know, too much for him, you know, getting towards the rim. We saw plenty of opportunities in that game where James was kind of dancing in the mid-range area of the court because Brook Lopez was dropped low into the paint. And Harden, again, refuses to shoot that mid-range shot. And those are the situations where, again, I'm like, if they're giving you the wide-open mid-range, just take it, man. Because, again, he could hit some of those. And rather than consistently trying to settle for the three-point shot, just get the points on the board. Now, Russell Westbrook, on the other hand, you know, while he did miss his fair share of mid-range jimmies, he was so aggressive in taking the ball straight to the rim, using his speed, using his explosiveness to get past Bucks defenders. And even though he wasn't necessarily able to finish all the time at the rim because of the length of the Milwaukee Bucks, he was still able to draw contact, draw fouls. He still didn't get to the free throw line as many times as I thought he should have. Like, legitimately, I thought James Harden was one of the most unfairly officiated players in the league, and then Russell Westbrook became a Houston Rocket, and I watched on a night-in, night-out basis how often that guy drives to the basket, gets hammered, and doesn't receive a foul call. Like, it is so unfair that the guy who leads the league in drives to the rim does not somehow also lead the league in free throw attempts. I know that would mean that he's eclipsing James Harden, but hey, since they're on the same team, who cares? I'd love for both of them to be 1 and 2 respectively leading the league in free throw attempts because they deserve it. They drive to the rack so often. And this is one that nobody's going to want to hear about, but LeBron James too. There's a lot of stars in this league that because of how good they are, they probably don't get the calls that they should driving to the rim that maybe a normal player would get. I will say that Giannis does get a fair share of calls as he's just barreling his way to the basket. But that being said, I think that it was a great game from Russ, great all-around game from him. And truly, his impact defensively is what really won them the game, I think, down the stretch, being so active, you know, on that end of the basketball court in passing lanes and whatnot. But specifically, you know, his offense being able to shoulder that load, you know, really kind of allowed James to not it takes some of the pressure off of James. And I think that's so important for either one of them to be able to step up at the end of a game, just like Russ did in the opening night game against the Milwaukee Bucks way back, you know, 14 years ago at the start of this NBA season. Russell Westbrook took over down the stretch of that game and almost won the Rockets the game. And I was sitting there thinking, this is beautiful, because it had been so few and far between the season prior of games that Chris Paul was actually, you know, quote unquote, able to take over. There were more of them that first season with Chris Paul, but he just wasn't the same in that 18-19 campaign. And so seeing Russ the very first night out in a real game in a Rockets jersey, basically taking over down the stretch, it was very refreshing. And to this day, I still think that he doesn't get enough credit for the games that he does step up in where James Harden simply doesn't have it. And we're going to talk about a few of those games here in just a minute, because unfortunately the Rockets record as it stands against the Trailblazers this season is just 1-2. And in a couple of those losses, it's mainly because James Harden just didn't quite have it in some of those games. And you know who did have it? Russell Westbrook. So we got to get Russell Westbrook some help, and we'll talk about that in just a moment after a quick word from our friends over at CBDMD. Look, it doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Look, everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube, while CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBD MD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code MBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com and use promo code MBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Getting ready to talk about the Rockets' upcoming matchup with the Portland Trailblazers. And this is an interesting matchup because looking back at the three games that these two teams played against each other previously, so Clint Capela was a factor in the first game. Well, I mean, Clint Capela played all three games. The final game, which was his last game as a Houston Rocket, he actually only played 17 minutes in, and that was January 30th, and I believe it's because the very following night they played the Dallas Mavericks, and so that was, yeah, Clint Capela's last game as a Rocket was against the Blazers, played 17 minutes, had basically zero impact. So looking at these games, though, the very first game of the season, Rockets win 132-108. Second game of the season, Portland comes out on top 117-107. And then the final game of the season between these two teams was Portland W 125-112. Now, yes, the makeup of this team has completely shifted since then, but I think that one thing that we can look at is Russell Westbrook has played phenomenally well against the Blazers in pretty much every single outing. He's had some incredible numbers. His averages against the Blazers in these three games, 32.7 points, 11.3 rebounds, 9.3 assists, almost averaging an entire triple-double against the Blazers. And the great part is that's probably a little bit of pride on Russell Westbrook's part, the whole Damian Lillard beef, the eliminating OKC from the playoffs, the shot over Paul George. Yeah, he's not a Thunder player anymore, but he probably still, takes it personally and probably still likes to go toe-to-toe with Damian Lillard. And there's a whole nother element of that, the fact that a lot of people are going to have Damian Lillard and Chris Paul above Russell Westbrook on their all-NBA selections, and I'm sure Russ takes that personally. I'm sure Russ views himself as the greatest point guard in the NBA, and I would agree with that. I think it's tough to point to either Chris Paul or Damian Lillard and put them above Russell Westbrook, at least the way that he's been playing since January. And, maybe if you make the argument for the entire season because he kind of started this year off a little bit slower, then maybe you could say that one of those two other guys has had a better year, maybe. But easily since January, Russ has been the best point guard in the NBA, bar none. So that being said, the fact that he may be getting left off some all-NBA selection teams, that NBA or that ESPN ranked him, 22nd, best player in the league is just absolutely ridiculous. He is still, at this level of production, he is easily still a top 10 player in this league. And so picturing him going up against these Blazers, I'm sure he's going to want to come out and have another monster night against these guys. But the X factor, really, what it looks like, I mean, there's two things. So first off is Yusuf Nurkic. So Nurkic is going to have a big game, and that's what we're going to come to expect from opposing bigs who play the Houston Rockets. They are going to have big games. Now, the problem is you cannot concede a gigantic evening to Yusuf Nurkic and then also allow Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to explode. You can't do that. What you have to do is you're going to make Nurkic be the guy to beat you. Because it's going to be similar to the Milwaukee Bucks game where they allowed Brooke Lopez consistently to take the ball down low, to post up. Yeah, Brooke Lopez had a big game. Did the Bucks win? No, because the Rockets actually outmathed them with the three-point shooting. Now, the thing about the Blazers are they are a team that is very capable of matching the math of the Houston Rockets from behind the three-point arc. In fact, in their most recent game, a loss against the Boston Celtics, the Blazers put up 42 three-pointers, and they hit 19 of them. So, and that was with Dame only going 5 of 14 from behind the arc. So the thing about their team, you know, they have a lot of shooters. They have guys who can get hot, and they can go toe-to-toe with the Rockets offensively, and they can match that volume from behind the arc pretty much just with Dame and CJ McCollum. Wow, I'm stumbling all over CJ's name. Anyways, they've got tons of offense, right? The question is going to be, can they contain the Rockets defensively? And that's, it's going to probably be another shootout similar to the Mavericks game, honestly. But I do think that you have to make Nurkic be the guy to beat you. If you start double-teaming Nurkic in the paint, you know, sending a second body at him, trying to prevent the post-ups, trying to prevent the easy twos, the shots over the top, then you're going to be giving wide-open shots to one of Lillard or McCollum or Carmelo Anthony, whoever it may be. You're going to give wide-open looks to them. And that's not something you want. You don't want to concede the wide-open looks just because you're getting, you know, demolished in the paint. We saw the Milwaukee Bucks put up an absurd number of paint points. I want to say it was like 60 points in the paint or something. Where's my little tracker? Hang on. I've got this. I want to confirm this really quick because this is important. Box score. Where'd this go? Where's their points in the paint? Come on, man. Team stats. All right. Anyways, there it is. Points in the paint. Yeah, the Bucks put up 60 points in the paint against the Rockets, and they were still able to come away with the W because, say it with me now, 3 is greater than 2. So, that being said, you cannot concede the three-point shot to the Blazers. So it's going to be big from PJ Tucker and from Jeff Green. Those two guys do need to try and limit Nurkic as much as possible in the paint, but it's probably going to be similar to Brooke Lopez. It's probably going to be just a showing of, you know, a seven-footer making easy shots over two shorter players. Now, the flip side of that is offensively, we saw exactly what happened with the Bucks, where they were content to allow PJ Tucker and Jeff Green to beat them from behind the three-point arc. They didn't care about the mismatch with Brooke Lopez having to stay matched up, or at times, Robin Lopez having to stay matched up with one of those two guys on the perimeter. They kept sagging their big in towards the paint to try and limit the paint scoring from James Harden and Russell Westbrook, which was largely effective because James Harden only made two shots inside the arc. Russ was a bit more aggressive getting to the rim and at least drawing fouls to score at the charity stripe. So that's an important element there, is if they're clogging the paint, if they're going to, you know, use their bigs to attempt to alter shots at the rim, then if you go in with aggressiveness with the attempt to, you know, draw a foul rather than worrying about trying to finish the shot, then you should be able to at least make some trips to the free throw line as opposed to, you know, getting your shots swatted every other attempt at the basket. So that being said, it'll be interesting to see how Nurkic plays the PJ Tucker, Jeff Green matchups, because he will have to rotate out on the perimeter and hold one of those two guys. Now, PJ Tucker, unfortunately, isn't the guy who's going to take Nurkic off the dribble and, you know, kind of burn him on that side of the court. Jeff Green, on the other hand, can. So it's going to be some combination, again, of PJ Tucker and Jeff Green getting some very wide open looks offensively. And then on the flip side of that, Jeff Green is also going to be able to take Nurkic off the dribble on closeouts. So that's going to be something to keep an eye out for, to look forward to, is watching Jeff Green attack off of Nurkic closeouts on the perimeter and continue to keep the Blazers defense scrambling. Now, in these two losses against the Blazers, it really feels like there were two quarters. So it was the second quarter in the first loss, and then in the third loss, sorry, I apologize. It was the second quarter in the final loss, and then in the second loss against the Blazers, it was also the second quarter. Cool. So both times, it looks like the Rockets just kind of fell asleep in the second quarter, or, you know, didn't hit their stride offensively, weren't able to keep up with the scoring, whatever it may be, and you've got to play a complete game against these guys. And that goes for saying against any team in the NBA, really, is you have to play a complete game. But we know that this Rocket system, the sheer volume of threes that they put up, they are prone to having some lapses offensively where they have, you know, a drought. We saw that against Milwaukee, where they had the 9-point lead at halftime, and then they basically gave it back up all throughout the third quarter because just shots weren't falling. And there has to be a better mix of attempting three-point shots that, you know, obviously are the shots that you want to get. If they're wide open looks, they're good looks, yes. But just because you got 7 or 8 or 10 good looks in a row and you haven't hit any of them, I feel like there needs to be a little bit more mixing in of attacking the rim, or, you know, mixing in some of the mid range from Russ, or him operating out of the post, whatever it may be, some, you know, some rolling action towards the rim, because it would be the same thing as in, you know, in football, if you're trying to pass every time down the field, right? If you don't mix in any of the run action, then suddenly defenses are going to start pressing the receivers, and you're not going to be able to get anything done. So legitimately, if all the Rockets do is spam three-pointers throughout a game, once they hit that drought, yes, you are prone to fall behind. You are absolutely going to get blown out of the water by a team who is putting points on the board in a variety of ways. Again, the three-point shooting is great when it works, but when it's not working, I'd like to see them alternate, right? Have one or two plays where, yeah, you dribble drive, you kick out for an open three, yes. Then have a couple plays that are set up to get some action going towards the rim and kind of flip-flop between those two, because that was the thing with Chris Paul, is we had that steadying influence of the mid-range game where it's like, okay, we had a few plays, we tried some threes, yes, they went in, no, they didn't go in, okay, now Chris is going to operate out of the mid-range for a couple plays in a row, and we're to get 2 to 4 points on the board because the guy is pretty much automatic. So Russ doesn't provide that same level of consistency from scoring, you know, at the rim or from the mid-range as Chris Paul did. I take that back. His consistency scoring at the rim is phenomenal when he's going there. I do think he still settles a little bit too much for the mid-range jumpers, but if the mid-range jumpers were falling, we wouldn't be complaining about them. And so it's hard to fault his style of play, because when it does work, it works beautifully. And so I don't want to harp on him too much, because that's his style of play. We don't hammer James Harden for taking, you know, an ungodly amount of three-pointers, because look, when the threes are raining and they're falling and he's making them, we think he's the greatest player in the NBA. So it's hard to fault their play style, their individual play styles, just because it works, you know, two or three nights in a row, and then there's one night where they're having a slightly off game. So coming up, I'll have the final segment here in just one moment. Some final thoughts about this matchup with the Trailblazers, as well as a quick update on the NBA seeding and how things kind of look as it currently stands a couple games into the bubble. And we'll get more on that in just a quick second after a quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. Say it with me now. Sports are back. Look, I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind. MyBookie. Well, MyBookie and the Rockets. Look, MyBookie is a home run, a slam dunk, a triple overtime game-winning shot all wrapped up into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. If you're feeling good about your team's chances this year, be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows that you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season's even begun. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB futures wager. All you gotta do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are super simple. You bet, you win, they pay. And we're back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So I already kind of went in on just talking about the fact that Nurkic is going to absolutely dominate this game. I'm expecting him to score 30. I'm predicting it right now. Nurkic is going to drop 30. Look, across the first two games, he's averaging 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists to go along with 2 steals and a pretty stellar 3.5 blocks per game. So he's active, he's big, he's going to score easily over the Rockets. There's not a lot that you can do there to hope to contain him. What you can do is you can pick your poison. Let Nurkic be the guy to try and beat you on twos and contain the three-point line. Conversely, Rockets got to hit their threes in this one. They missed so many wide-open, good looks against the Bucks, and part of that's probably legs. Part of that's probably the fact that PJ Tucker and Jeff Green for large parts of the game were having to bang with the likes of Brook Lopez in the paint, as well as, you know, just how difficult it is from a team defense standpoint to have to be engaged every single play down the court to try and not contain Giannis because you can't really contain him, but to minimize his effectiveness, you know, on the offensive end. And it's just they have to hit their shots. That's what it boils down to, is when you are given wide open shots in the NBA, it's a make or miss league. You have to hit them. And they're going to be given a plethora of wide open shots to those two guys. Those two guys really are the difference makers in PJ Tucker and Jeff Green, because those are where the matchups are going to happen that favor the Rockets, where opposing teams with big men who have legitimate size at the five spot, those bigs have to choose between being parked out on the perimeter and actually containing the three-point shot or not conceding the three-point shot versus sagging in and preventing shots at the rim. And so it'll be interesting, because maybe the Blazers opt to go a different direction with it than the Bucks did. Maybe they will allow Nurkic to sit out further on the perimeter and be closer to the likes of PJ Tucker and Jeff Green and not concede the three-point shot out there. But if they do that, guess what? That opens up the rim, that opens up driving lanes for Russell Westbrook and James Harden. So it's, look, basketball, it's like a chess match, right? And between the coaches, it's always interesting to see what one coach is willing to give up. You know, the Bucks, we hear it consistently on all the broadcasts and everything. They give up the most three-pointers in the league, but they are so elite at defending the paint and defending the rim, it doesn't matter. They're going to make you beat them by hitting three-point shots, which is great because the Rockets are geared to do that anyways. That being said, if you don't hit your shots, you're not going to win. And so that's just kind of what it boils down to. And I already mentioned it briefly at the top, but just watching the individual matchup between Russ and Dame is always going to be exciting, because Russ is a guy who really gets into these games. And, you know, as long as Russ and James can match the production of Nurkic plus McCollum and Lillard, then it comes down to the role players, because I really do think Nurkic is going to be the best player in this game for the Blazers. It's just the writing is on the wall there for a big man to be able to dominate the Rockets, or for a skilled big man to be able to dominate the Rockets the way that other bigs have already so far in just two short games, as well as games, you know, pre-hiatus from small ball. So the board, you know, they're going to lose the battle of the boards. They have to have active hands defensively. They need to be converting those turnovers into points off of turnovers. That's a key element there, because if you're going to get destroyed on the rebounds, you have to make up for it somewhere else. That is the new math, is as long as what they score on, you know, off of forced turnovers, steals, those kinds of things, as long as they score off those points, then any second chance points that are given up due to offensive rebounds are largely negated. And in fact, going back and doing the math against the Bucks, the Rockets actually gave up, what was it? Second chance points. Why am I not here? Oh, I don't have it pulled up. It was some difference. Like, the Bucks had, like, I think 11 second chance points, but the Rockets had X number of points off of forced turnovers, and they wound up actually, like, edge being like a plus two in that category, like when you compare the two. And that wound up being, you know, kind of the difference maker, the new math, so to speak, of how Rockets small ball works defensively by conceding rebounds. So that's what I've got for this matchup. It's going to be a fun one. The Blazers don't have Rodney Hood or Trevor Ariza. Likewise, the Rockets do not have Eric Gordon, who is still out with the ankle injury. No new update on him. So all that being said, let's just take a brief look at the seeding schedule, or not the seeding schedule. What am I saying? The standings is what I tried to say. Words are hard. And as it stands, the Rockets are actually comfortably sitting in sole possession of the fourth seed heading into tonight's matchup against the Trailblazers. So if they win this, they continue to hold down the fort at that four spot. And frankly, you know, it's going to be a toss-up between what happens still between these, you know, the 3, 4, 5, and 6 seeds, as the Rockets are only a game and a half back of the Nuggets. They are, you know, they've won 2 games in a row, technically 3 games in a row, because it's still counting the Timberwolves game from all the way back when. But, you know, ideally, right, that first round matchup, would love it to be the Utah Jazz. Honestly, the scariest first round matchup, and the one that I do not want to see, is the one against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think that Chris Paul on a revenge tour against the Houston Rockets, who traded him, would be a very hard fought series. I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are a sneaky good team and could very easily upset one of the higher seeded teams this year in the playoffs. So kudos to them, because nobody thought that they were going to be this good coming into the season, but they really have become, you know, greater than the collection of their parts. What is it? The sum is greater than the collection of all the parts, or something like that. I'm probably butchering that expression. You know what I mean. So that being said, I do not want to face the Thunder, but you just got to keep, the Rockets just got to keep winning their games, win as many as you can. And it, you know, whoever you face in the first round, so be it. If it is the Thunder, you know, you'll face them, you'll go up against them. I still think the Rockets are the favorites in that series. I just think it's going to be a harder fought series than one with, say, the Utah Jazz or potentially even the Denver Nuggets, depending on how seeding slides around. I don't necessarily see the Mavericks as a possibility. That one is, you know, it's probably going to be the Jazz or the Thunder. Just kind of the way things are shaking up right now, it's probably going to be one of those two teams. And obviously, we'd favor the Jazz out of those matchups. So that being said, I think that's where we're going to wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.